Welcome to the Bank of Life podcast. I'm your host, James Nethery. I'm excited about today's show, even though it's not a long form episode. What we've done, we've gone back and taken clips from previously released episodes on particular topics and points. I think they're powerful. I think they're worth listening to. So thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy. Have a client, 3 years into the policy, substantial premiums, and he's been building capital, right? And I think he's done, you know, one short-term kind of business loan from the life insurance company, collateralizing his policy. And I know he did one loan previous to that just to understand the functionality and the timing, you know, of a loan and loan repayment. And yep, he paid interest for that education, and he was happy to do so. Okay. Very successful in business. Very successful. Historically very successful. But it's also a very niche market, his business, right? And successful investment history. He collateralizes. He takes most of his liquidity to make an investment with partners. Good investment, and they had some knowledge of it, and there was no reasonable expectation of it not working out close to what they expected, right? So he didn't just blindly do it. He's done very successful investments previously. I'm not getting into the nature of the investment. It was legitimate. But, oh, my gosh, it didn't work out. And and this has happened over, you know, several months. I mean, that happened last year. It's confirmed there'll be zero return of his money.
Oof.
All right. Not foregoing the return on his money. He's facing and foregoing zero return of his money, which caused other issues, right? And so he's got a policy, right? And he's, you know, and I have an advisory, we have an advisor, we have a philosophy, and he's been doing that. You know, this is your tier one capital, this is your reserve, it's not meant to have every loan or every dollar collateralized in a loan, which I've seen that in social media. Every dollar of cash value should be collateralized. That is BS, and I'm being nice. That is so BS. When somebody says that, you know they don't know what they're talking about, and you know they haven't done that, and you know they don't do that. If they do that, they've only been doing it for a short period of time. Okay.
Yeah.
So we have conversation, James, you know, because whenever you do business with me in my office, you get us, right? We come with, have service, ongoing, you know, consultations. And anyway, he's like, James, this is what I'm thinking, this is what I'm doing, you know, what are you? So this is what happens when the business cycle turns. And it just started turning within his industry. So the investment went bad. In his particular industry, that has had a correction. And a lot of industries have had corrections in the first quarter of this year, right? Okay. And still not a good turnaround. So the investment return is zero. And he was really over-levered to the maximum point of leveraging, no question. In my opinion, a little bit over-leveraged, right? Then his business takes an adjustment in their industry's little business cycle. So he's forced, right, to collateralize, do a cash-out refi, primary property, at a higher interest rate environment. Payments double, right? And now things can change, right? His business cycle can change. You know, he's done well through life. He can pull out more. He can sell other assets and do what, you know. He still has not, it's not to the point where it's a complete meltdown yet, right? But it's getting close. And then you look at the action of a policy that's properly designed 3 years into it, and there he has the means to pay the premium, maximum, not maximally, but do a significant loan to and continue paying the premium and doing the significant loan for several years before it burns down. Hmm. So he's
and keep the structure alive.
Keep the structure alive, right? And of course, he's I say middle aged. He's relatively young, but children, college expenses ahead, all of these things, you know, that that most of us are going to enjoy in our life, the expenses, right? Now, and my point here is that's what happens. Things outside of his control. He did all the due diligence, all the vetting that he could, going in business with people that he was familiar with and knew, and the deal still went bad. Interest rates are up, right? Now he's got to refinance an asset at a double the rate, right? Okay, but he still has a life insurance policy that can eke it out. And we've got it where if he ekes it out, no, he's going to be fine. If he can't eke it out, we have a solution, a legitimate solution, yeah, right, that he can recover. And if he has to burn it down, how do you properly burn things down? How do you walk away with as much intact as possible and maintain the ability to rebuild?
To come back and get it.
Yes.
After the fact, if you...
Because the future's still unknown.
But the next thing we did was buy a car. But let's do that. And then let's buy another one. And
When you went in to buy the car, and I mean, I'm just assuming you write a check.
Oh, yeah, I just wrote a check. Just
did the salesman bat an eye at that? Because it didn't happen every day that week.
No.
That salesman's life.
You do that. But no, it was, no. Don't I don't recall it being like a dynamic event for them, but it was for us. It was well, you know, we just used some of our infinite banking policy to go buy this car, but it's also still working and growing inside the policy. How does that work?
Collateralization, like, right?
Figure that out. It was great. And then we bought a house with one. Or two, and that was like amazing.
Did that? You know, at closing, did that?
No, they don't. They didn't. They kind of. Well, they always want to know where you're getting your money from, right? And so we tell them
business.
Yeah, right. And I mean, most recently, we moved to Tennessee in the last year, and we used a policy for that house, and that was kind of fun. The banker, honest to goodness, the banker never did figure out what they what? Yeah. And I go, yeah, this is okay. But anyway, you have the cash. Yes, so I have the cash, and we're good to go. And boom.
You know, we get have over the years. You know, where a mortgage underwriter wants a statement from the life insurance company that loan values don't have to be repaid.
Yeah.
No. And the life insurance company will write that. We don't write them, right? The life insurance companies, they'll write that. The loan is always repaid from the life insurance. Always. Either always. You're going to pay for it, or you're going to surrender the policy, and it's 100% collateralized by the cash value, or you're going to graduate.
So, or by the death benefit.
Yeah, on graduation.
Yes.
Right.
Yep.
And then, you know, then there's a net death benefit. So, but it's interesting. The mortgage lenders, the underwriters, the mortgage underwriters, they have no idea. And how would they know anything about the infinite banking concept?
And they don't.
They don't.
No. And most Wall Street doesn't know anything about it.
The ones that do know about it are doing it.
Yes.
Let me tell you, some of those people you watch on TV.
They're doing it.
They are.
Yep. I'd say a lot of the Fortune 500 high-end people are doing it through Boley and Coley and some other things. They may not be using it the way we tell them to, but
wait a minute. You mean Warren Buffett, who owns Swiss Re and the reinsurance companies? They're not banking. They're not buying with Geico and the Lizard and all this.
What do you think the odds are?
Nah.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, I've talked to bankers over the years, and you know, just helping them. Well, you think you're helping them. You try to help them, you know, expand their knowledge.
Yep.
Right. So the additional interest, and it comes up continually. I think our clients, I think most of our clients, longtime listeners, you know, I think that we've covered this, you know, adequately in the past, but it continues to confuse the new uninitiated person, right?
Absolutely.
And so the additional interest that Nelson is pointing out on page 58, you want to quote it?
Yeah. Of course, always have my BYOB handy. So specifically on that page, Nelson says, actually, this interest is not really interest. It is additional premium capital that has been paid into the policy that equals the interest that was being paid to the finance company. That is the reason it is adding to the cost basis of the policy. If you have trouble understanding this, go back to the grocery store on page 15. He says, if you don't understand, then contact me. So, you know, contact us. But you know, it's...
Nelson would have answered the phone.
He would have.
When he was here, he did.
Yeah.
So the additional interest, I think it's important to continually bring that up and remember, because in speech... Even in speech, when we're talking, well, my policy is getting better because I'm using it. Well, what does that mean?
Right? Yeah, exactly.
So the policies are not more efficient, or they do not get better because you borrow against them. They get better because you pay, quote unquote, additional interest. So if I'm borrowing from the life insurance company at 5%, let's mm-hmm. say, and I'm paying off a credit card that was at, 28% interest. If I'm going to be honest banker, I'm going to put that percentage differential between the 5 and the 28 to my policy.
Yes.
And so I'm calling it interest, right? That's what it was when you're paying it to the credit card company or whatever other third-party lender. So if I'm honest banker, and I should be, then that additional interest, that additional 23%, I'm calling interest, we call interest on the deal, but it is premium to the life insurance company.
In the form of a paid-up additions rider more often than not as well.
Absolutely.
And a lot of people, I've gotten this actually kind of recently too, and you know, sometimes this is kind of basic for folks, but PUA and paid-up addition are the same thing. So a PUA is a paid-up addition. So I know that's you know, maybe basic for a lot of folks out there.
And that's a rider. The paid up additions rider is rider to a whole life policy.
Yes.
And then too, let me say that it's premium to the life insurance company. We're calling an interest in our deal and being honest banker and controlling that mm-hmm. debt service, right? If we're paying them a certain amount of interest, we're going to put that same equivalent into our system. And your policy has to be designed to take it, or there's other methods to make sure and capture that interest. Is that what those are?
Yeah, yeah. So
taxable, tax deferred, and tax free. I mean, I can't see that far. I can't.
Yeah, you know. That's it. That's basically, yeah. Tax me now, tax me later.
Tax me again, Uncle free, Sam, please. Yeah. I got the Cindy syndrome.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So anyway, that's it just depends on who I'm talking to, but it's just a simple way to actually, you know, all of Nelson's examples in the book show taking money out later, but I don't think people really grasp it because they're looking at financing things, right? And the vehicles and the log trucks and things of that nature. And so when you actually look at it, you know, for income, for cash flow, it's, you know, it's a little different. And, you know, Nelson always liked to talk about business in his seminars, right? And so he would ask, are there any business owners here, right? And business owners tend to get this concept a little bit better than people that work, you know, for wages, because they're used to profits and expenses and things of that nature, right? And they understand cash flow a little bit. So, you know, but on the same token, being a business owner for, you know, 35, going on 40 years now almost, you know, business owners can be a little unorganized and don't like to keep records all the time and this and that. So it's it can get convoluted if you want it to, but it really doesn't have to be. It's just about a place to store money and a place to access money, whether it be for business, financing, or just for cash flow in retirement.
You know, I agree. I think simplicity is a virtue. You know, complexity is what it is, but the more complex something is, the more fragile it is. And it really doesn't have to be complicated. It doesn't have to be quote unquote dumbed down either. I mean, there's,
right.
But it's very simple.
Yeah.
and very powerful. I think most people today, or Nelson said it, it's where I got it, I repeat it. It's like most people's understanding of life insurance is based on someone else's misunderstanding or misconception of life insurance. That's so true today. And when you look at life insurance, dividend paying whole life insurance by a mutual company that hopefully has no intentions of demutualizing, I won't go into that, but very powerful when you compare it to everything else that you can do or most people do in the financial world. And everything we do in life is going to be compared to what other people are doing.
Wow.
And if they're going backwards and we're going forwards, we're twice ahead of them.
I've had a occasion with a few clients who, you know, true believers, true fans, whatever you want to call it, people who have really implemented IBC, you know, they're, if not completely maximally insured.
See, I don't think we talk about those clients enough.
We don't. I had an email. This just raises to my email from a current client. His name, we'll call him Jay. So,
You, Bob.
He knows who he is. But, you know, he's talking about, this is just unsolicited because I don't have a sales structure for the current clients, right? I don't have these scheduled meetings where I can like evaluate your finances to find some money to sell you more products because I don't do that. But we have a, you know, it's a relationship, client advisor relationship. And I make a point to talk about service after the fact. Like this is, if you get a policy through my office, that in my mind creates a client advisor relationship. And so we have ongoing access. Like we can talk and some people want that, other people don't. And anyway, this individual, Jay, just sent me an email and said, I love this. For the next, I'm paraphrasing, I want more base for these next ones. Our first two were of a 30-70 type structure. I want to have more base. I want to have more base, more base. I'd also like to explore convertible term policies to cover as much of our remaining insurability as possible. Don't really have a good sense of where that puts us in death benefit, so some insights here would be helpful to see how that plays out with respect to the convertible term policies.
That doesn't bring a tear to your eye.
Yeah.
I don't know what will.
Oh, and I'd like to understand what policies on my son, who brand new son basically, would look like given the above.
Congratulations.
Yeah, I mean, how cool! I mean, that you want to talk about like what someone who gets IBC, who is like full on implementation. That's what that looks like.
Yeah, right? And that's going to have a particular result, and that particular result. Sure, will I be here? It sounds like he's a young guy. If he's just having babies, you know, probably not. Hopefully, that result compared to the other short sighted results, where because I was, you know, mesmerized by something flashy and shiny and convincing and what have you, it'll have a result too. And the comparison between the two results are going to be dramatically different. The older policies were written to age 100. Now they're written to 120 years. So that cash value is going to meet the increasing face amount because the dividends are buying additional death benefits, so the death benefit is increasing. But so that cash value must, by contract, guaranteed contract, must equal the face amount at age, you know, 120 if you go buy a policy today. So there's two components to that, the dividend accumulation and then the increase in the cash value of the base policy. And I say that because when you use the word interest rate, you know, we can calculate an interest rate if we have, you know, the present value, the future value, you know, the time, and then, you know, we can all calculate the rate of return or the interest rate on that. And I'm only spending time here because a lot of people, it's quite often in the infinite banking world that it's like, well, this policy earns 5%. Well, we can calculate an interest rate, right? But I prefer to use an internal rate of return because the accumulation is a combination of a guaranteed increase and then a non-guaranteed dividend, right? So if you have premiums going in and a death benefit paying out and a time period, or you get mad and quit and you surrender the policy, you know, then we can calculate an internal rate of return. Then therefore, then we can compare life insurance to other assets if we wish, because a mutual fund or an investment account, they're going to have a different time period, a different cash flow. You know, if I go buy a bond portfolio, I'm putting money in, but I'm receiving bond interest, you know, and then I'm going to take the bond and sell it eventually. So the cash flows in and out are separate, sure. just like a real estate portfolio. Mm-hmm. They would have, you know, I might buy a house and keep it for 6 months and sell it. I might buy and hold one. I might buy and keep one for 9 months. So cash flows in and out are different. But if we have the time period and the cash values or the cash flows and the starting value and the ending value, then we can calculate an internal rate of return, and then, therefore, we can compare asset class to asset class.
I love
class.
That. Exactly. And on a personal financial statement, speaking of what you're just saying, banks will calculate cash value on a financial statement. They won't calculate the actual the life insurance policy
the death
unless
benefit.
It's cash value. Yeah, the death benefit's
right.
not calculated.
That's right.
But the cash value is. So that's really what you're saying. The cash value is where it's at. And if you calculate that internal rate of return,
it's good.
You really, and you're smiling because it can really be a big number. I mean, you can make a lot more through that than you could just a standard traditional certificate of deposit or an IRA or 401k, and those are all good things.
Yeah.
But what you're saying, if you've got the ability to do it and you know how to understand it, because I think a lot of people, and that's what I love about your podcast, you explain it in layman's terms to people that may have the ability to do it but don't understand it.
Yeah.
And that's the key. But if you've got the ability to do it, understand what James is saying here, because it really could be a huge wealth factor for you over the 20, 30 year span.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.